What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode here of Classically Emo. You guys have made it through another week. If you're listening to this, obviously, unless you found a way to listen in the afterlife, in which case that gives me a significant amount of hope that I can at least listen to podcasts when I'm dead. But thank you guys so much for checking it out this week. If you're listening to this, and if you listened last week to our very first episode where I had my friend James Boss come on and we talked about Sugar Cult's Lights Out. I will not lie. I expected that to flop like Liam Payne's record, like Liam Payne's solo record did when he left One Direction. But it didn't, I don't want to say I'm like Harry Styles. But I will say Harry Styles was born 2 days before me. Literally 2 days before me, February 1st. Can you fucking believe it? So, you know, whatever powers there be, whether it is a god or somebody, was fucking creating the universe and creating fucking people in the month of February for 1994. And that motherfucker gave Harry Styles to everybody, his birthed Harry Styles on February 1st. And then by the time we got to February 3rd, he was so exhausted that he fucking just said, here, put this conglomerate of fucking spare parts together, and fucking out I came. So I don't know really what that means. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I had that thought a week ago and I just had to put it out on the fucking air because you know what? Why not? A smarter person would probably stop recording and re-record this, but honestly, it's just chaos. It fits the world that we're in. So we're just going to roll with the punches. This week, if you've gotten this far, God willing, you have read the title. So I've got, my friend Landon DeVever coming on. We're going to talk about the Wonder Years Suburbia I've Given You All and Now I'm Nothing, which is a record that turned 10 years old this year, is turning 10 years old this year in a few months. And that alone makes me want to vomit because I distinctly remember when that record came out. And we dive obviously a lot and more into this when Landon comes on. We do this whole thing together for about 50 minutes or so. But it's such a great fucking record. And Landon was actually one of the first people I talked to about doing an episode of this podcast with months ago. And we kind of went back and forth. We talked about a different record. And then it came to be that this thing was going to be launching this year. And so then it pivoted to, all right, let's do a 10-year anniversary. And then immediately was Suburbia by the Wonder Years. So we talk a lot about this record. Just what where we were at when it came out, what the reception was, how it holds up, and literally everything in between, and some things we'd like to see kind of in the future with this record. So just go ahead and keep listening. Again, if you've made it this far, you might as well just go for the next 52 minutes because it certainly does not get any worse. All right, so I'm here with Landon DeFever. Today we're going to talk about the Wonder Years Suburbia I've Given You All and Now I'm Nothing, a phenomenal record, and we're going to have a lot to talk about with it. But Landon, before we get started, just kind of give everyone a little bit of a background on your introduction to music, kind of what got you into music.
Well, I've been going to concerts pretty much all my life, especially it amped up in college more, like when you get that initial sense of freedom and be able kind of get out into the world, and once college hits sort of thing, you just kind of do whatever you like, and that was kind of how I spent my time. And yeah, I've always been interested in music in general. I for many years, starting in college, I wrote for about 2 years, I wrote for a music blog called Mind Equals Blown.
Yeah.
And then after doing like various interviews, editorials, reviews, all that good stuff, I reached out to the editor-in-chief at Substream Magazine at the time and just sent them some of my work that I'd done, and they liked it and decided to give me a shot as a contributor, which Logan, are you still at Substream?
Yeah, I am, absolutely.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, so I did that for 2.5 years, basically until I got out of college, and then when I got my first salary job, I basically just transitioned from journalistic, music journalism into... Mm-hmm. Just the world of more behind the scenes stuff with with just working with venues and street teams and stuff like that, so I could still go to the crass amount of shows that I've been to pre-pandemic. But yeah, that's kind of how I got into music, and was through doing interviews and doing a lot of writing and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I know we've obviously both been to a ton of concerts, but and yeah, those college years are great. That's definitely when you get that more freedom. You kind of freed up from that normal high school stuff. So it's a lot of fun. But what band or I guess album did you kind of first like? Did you first really fall in love with? If you had to think about it,
ooh, ever in my life or when I got to college?
Ever. Like what point did you know that music, I guess, was going to be something? Because, you know, some people listen to music kind of not as much as we do, right? People listen to it, but they're maybe not. They don't kind of dive into it as much. But was there an album that you can specifically think of that you thought, holy shit, this is like, I love it?
I think for me, the first time I ever listened to an album that really clicked with me was John Mayer's Room for Squares, which is still my favorite album of all time, tied with Third Eye Blind, self-titled, and The Wonder Years Suburbia, which we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
Whenever someone asks me my favorite album of all time, I say it's a three-way tie between those three, and they're all awesome.
Yeah,
absolutely. The first record in this scene that I ever really gravitated heavily towards was, I think, Green Day's American Idiot was the first CD I ever got. The parental advisory thing was what really set me off, because before I was just passively listening to like pop radio and country and stuff. I never really like delved too into like that sort of alternative punk world, and that was my first introduction to that scene was probably that record. I don't love that record as much anymore. I think there are better Green Day albums, but I that record always has like a place in my heart as far as like that was my introduction to the scene. So that I would say was a big motivator for me as far as getting involved in this particular sect of music, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'm not the biggest Green Day fan even in general.
Oh, really?
But like, I like them. Like, they're kind of on the like level for me where I think of like, I love their singles. Like, their singles are to me like usually the strong ones. And I would say that's the same with American Idiot. Like, I would say the singles are great, but then, you know, I like St. Jimmy. But like, when I start thinking of like the kind of deeper cuts on that album, I don't really go back to them.
Not especially. And it's so funny you say that, because I collected vinyl for a number of years, like starting in early college, like 2011. And I recently sold off all of my, like most of my vinyl. I still have about 20 random ones that I kept hold of. And the only Green Day record I ever owned was International Super Hits, because that was the only thing I ever felt like I really needed. Like you said, like their singles are all so good. And I think they work within that context of hit. That's like one of the only greatest hits records I ever owned was just that record, because it's like, that is the era of Green Day I want to remember and cherish. So I totally understand that sort of mindset.
that's the golden era, man. I don't like necessarily being that person sometimes. It's like, oh, like their earlier stuff is only good stuff. And I think their newer stuff is okay. I just, you know, I think that for a lot of reasons, they really kind of hit their stride. You know, and since then they've kind of been, you know, regurgitating some of it, but I don't know. I'm just glad they didn't do the trilogy of albums again, but
I'll always appreciate that jump from like International Super Hits to American Idiot and 21st Century Breakdown. I'll always appreciate it aesthetically and sonically as far as like making a big statement and jumping into the next rung of what it means to be like one of the biggest bands in the world. Even though it doesn't click with me, like I'll always appreciate that those two records for that reason. But after that, I've just kind of lost interest, especially with that new new record was like one of my least favorite albums of 2020. It was so disappointing.
I mean, it was weird. I thought it had some potential. Like, I heard Father of All, and I was like, okay, this is kind of interesting. And
yeah, it's kind of back to where they were.
I just lost it for me. So it's all right. But I know you mentioned your kind of your top three records, and we'll definitely dive into that one. You know, we'll definitely dive into Suburbia here. There's so much to talk about. But I can't believe it's been 10 years almost, right? It'll be June 2011. So
yeah,
it's that's weird, man. I remember that record coming out so well. I remember like creeping like the absolute punk I remember all of that so well. So if you think back to 2011, what were like kind of where were you at in your life in 2011? Like, where were you at, you know, music-wise and kind of all of that?
So 2011, the first half of 2011 was really great. I was graduating high school. I graduated high school that May, basically. And I had only found out about the Wonder Years like 6 months prior. The way that, and I know this comes up later in the conversation, but the yep. way I initially found out about the Wonder Years was through them getting announced for the like Warped Tour. Remember when Warped yeah. Tour used to do those like weekly band announcements?
Oh gosh, yeah, I do, yeah.
yeah, where every week they would say, these five bands are playing the entire yeah, tour absolutely. These select dates. And I followed those religiously because that Warped Tour was basically my personality from 2009 to 2014, and then I kind sure, of then sure. I branched out a little bit. But yeah, that was a huge gateway for me finding a lot of different bands. Some of them good, some of them not so good yeah, for me. Yep. But the Wonder Years was one of those bands that really stuck with me, and I kind of got into the Upsides during that 6 month period between me them getting announced for the tour and me seeing them in July, and like after they mm-hmm. put out Suburbia, basically. So 2011 was like, as far as 2011 goes in general, the first half was great. I really enjoyed those last few months of high school.
Yeah.
I liked high school in general for the most part. I thought it was fine. And then my first year of college, like a lot of people, I kind of struggled to find where I fit in
sure.
to the grand scheme of things, like as a new adult, like kind of yeah. finding my way and sort of getting a direction, not really yeah. fitting in. So the second half of 2011 wasn't really great. But
yeah.
I mean that's kind of where I was in general, like a very yeah. transitionary period from one step to the next, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, that almost makes this record kind of the perfect timing, right? I mean, this is a very yeah. it's a very deep record in that sense, you know. I mean, this was, I know we've kind of written down some notes about it, you know, being that second trilogy, and of course, like, it wasn't really planned, right? I mean, that was something that they weren't really, you know, it wasn't 2009 writing the Upsides, we're going to make a trilogy of records about, you know, growing up, so to speak, right? And then you yeah, get to this one, and it just hits, man. I mean, it's such a different record from the Upsides, you know, but like, I don't know, they pulled it off so well. I don't know how they did it.
It's so crazy because, yeah, like you said, Dan never really went into the Dan Campbell, the lead singer, in case you're like completely like blind to the Wonder Years going into this episode, but basically, the Wonder Years, so basically Dan, their vocalist and songwriter, did not go into these first three records, The Upsides, Suburbia, and The Greatest Generation, with the thought and concept of it being a trilogy of records about his struggles with depression, anxiety, growing up, like a lot of those same transitions that a lot of people yeah. go through between 18 and 28. I would say like that 10-year sort of period.
Yeah, sure.
And basically, it didn't turn out that way. It's just the fact that Dan's writing style is so reliant in a good way, and this is a very big compliment, very reliant on callbacks to previous lyrics, like yeah. placing in little Easter eggs and hints as far as like referencing old songs, referencing old records, referencing specific memories that he's experienced himself, to the point where it just kind of, a lot of these themes kind of tied together in such a unique way
yep.
that people often refer to these three records as these three chunks that kind of turn into this one big trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think they started acknowledging kind of that, I think, when The Greatest Generation came out. I think it's kind of when they were like, okay, like, this is really like, if we're gonna look at it as a trilogy, this is gonna be the last one. And that's really, for the most part, kind of the last record that they did such extensive callbacks, right? I mean, but for Suburbia, I think this is a record where, for me, if I think of where I was in 2011 and what kind of music I listened to, honestly, I didn't really like The Upsides that much at first. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I saw them on that, like, when they were touring The Upsides. I didn't listen to the recording much because I didn't like his voice on the, like, on the album. And mm-hmm. so when you get to The Upsides,
I talked to a lot of people, and some people, I talked to like a surprising amount of people that listen to The Upsides first and it mm-hmm. doesn't initially click with them. I was one of these people too. I was, the first 2 weeks, I was very into bands like Set Your Goals, For You yeah. Strong at the time. Like, I was in that era of like mm-hmm. pop punk, alternative, whatever you want to call it. I was very into that. And then The Wonder Years was sort of that next phase of the evolution. That's when bands yeah. like Man Overboard, Transit, The Story So Far, like a lot of those bands were kind of coming up at the same time. Fireworks too, can't forget Fireworks.
Yeah, oh my god, I miss Fireworks.
Yeah. where's the album? Give me the album.
Yeah, anyway, oh my gosh.
basically, yeah, so like basically, like, coming from that sense of transition going from this next generation to what would come later with all those bands that I mentioned. I didn't, there was like a little bit of a transition period where I wasn't initially clicking with the band. Yeah. I liked them. It sounded cool. And I think it may have been the production. It may have been Dan's voice. It was like a new style or, but something eventually just clicked for me as I was listening to Washington Square Park. And I finally understood. Well, I was listening. I remember this moment. I was listening to it in my car and I was just listening to that song in particular. And then it gets into the second third of the song where it slows down and it gets to that hand clap part.
Yeah.
And Dan says, like, I left a lot of blood in California. And then it, like, rises and rises and then just explodes at the end. And that is the big moment for me where I was like, okay, I understand. I think I understand what this band is doing to this from a lyrical standpoint and how it all meshes together into this really succinct package.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with that entirely. And I think this record took that to the next level, right? I mean, obviously you had... You know, I'm sure they had a bigger budget behind it, right? Going to Hopeless Records, undoubtedly so. But I think they also just refined everything. You know, I mean, obviously it's only a year or so from when The Upsides came out. But I think, you know, personally, I know they all went through a lot, right, in that year or so time. And then it all kind of tells. And I mean, the most obvious thing, it's the record starts off, right? And then the title alone, you references Allen Ginsberg, America. And then they do that, obviously, lyrically throughout the record, right off the bat with the opening of Came Out Swinging, right? So, I mean, I think you know from the very start kind of what this record is going to be if you have, you know, if you look up anything about that poem, right? And then how they relate that to themselves. And I honestly don't know that any other band could have pulled it off. I know, obviously, no one's really tried that again, but I think that's probably for the best. I think it would almost be kind of corny at that point, you know, which is probably why they didn't do it again. So
yeah, exactly. It's so crazy because I've always said, like, I don't feel like any other band, with exception maybe Fireworks, writes at the same level. Like, as far as that scene of bands like Man Overboard, Transit, The Story So Far, like, I don't think any other band aside from maybe Fireworks writes to the level that Dan does, in the sense that there is such a narrative focus from beginning to end. The whole record is a complete story and a complete package. It feels like it doesn't feel like I wrote 12 songs about a girl that I am still getting over, basically, and this is my coping, which is fine. Those bands have a place. Don't get me wrong. Like, but at the same time, I feel like there is a sense of separation, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the podcast, but that was something that I always really appreciated about Dan's writing, was how just story-driven, narrative-driven, all of the references to the callbacks to different records and specific memories, and all of that just ties together so well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of notable references to America, right? I mean, and it kind of is, the record is kind of divided up into, you know, three parts, right? You've got their... You've got Suburbia, then you've got I Given You All, and I'm Nothing. So they split up the title into three different parts, and then each of those songs all kind of follow that kind of same, you know, whether it's tempo, everything like that. So I think it really ties everything together, just, you know, obviously very well.
Yeah, it's really cool because if you go back through and, like, play Suburbia, I've Given You All, and Now I'm Nothing, those three separate tracks, if you play them one after the other, they're all in the same, like you said, they're all in the same tempo, they're in the same time signature, and basically they wrote one song that they just kind of sectioned off into three parts that really ties the narrative together, which I think is really a really brilliant sort of lyrical device.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of things that I think really... I mean, honestly, we could go through the entire track list, right? I could sit here and I could spend 2 hours with you going through each song and kind of calling out, you know, what ones I think are really the strongest, right? But I think really that if we want to dive into it, we can pick a few. Obviously, I know we've kind of have a few written down here. And the biggest one I think is Came Out Swinging, right? I mean, that one, I remember their Glamour Kills tour when they opened with that song. And that was, first of all, it's a phenomenal track to open with for a lot of reasons, but I think it works very well. Obviously, they don't do that anymore because it's kind of became their biggest song, you know, but I feel like this one deserves a few minutes kind of diving into it. Now, what did you think, I guess, the first time that you heard this song specifically?
Yeah, I remember the first time I ever heard this record in full. I pre-ordered the entire album on iTunes, as people did in 2011, yeah. which is such a weird concept to think that Spotify wasn't a thing yet. So basically, I remember like hitting play on the record, and I love the strong build. It's so funny because I read America in high school, like in my AP Lit class. Nice. But it took me a few listens to be like, oh, this is from the Allen Ginsberg poem. Yeah. Right, okay. I could see what he's doing through a few through some of this. I just remember the constant build and just that explosion of a chorus and just, I don't know, just the way that it just ebbs and flows. It makes a really strong impact out of the gate for a record mm-hmm. like this. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has become like their career defining song. You know, I know mm-hmm. it's their top song on Spotify. I think it's outstreamed by I Don't Like Who I Was Then, which is honestly kind of surprising to me. I think it's a solid song. I mean, but I was surprised that this wasn't like their most streamed song, you know.
I'm curious how that is. I wonder if it was a case of playlist placement at the time, if they got on a lot of pop punk playlists on Spotify, maybe that upped their stream levels
it
for
probably
that particular
did.
Song. That song is very catchy. It's a really good single for No
it
Closer
is.
To Heaven, but I was kind of surprised by that too when I read the notes.
Yeah, it's got to be the playlist. I'm with you. I think it's the playlist because it's obviously 2015 is kind of when, you know, Spotify playlists really start skyrocketing, right? And mm-hmm. then you look at that song being like a very pop punky type song. So that's a very probably all like timed up pretty well for them with that one.
Yeah,
I think.
Very but. Accessible song too. I Don't Like Who I Was Then. Yeah, just, yeah, yeah. Like anyone can put that song on immediately and get a sense of what the band is. It doesn't rely on like having to have listened to the rest of the record or know what these specific like song mm-hmm. like those specific song references. So it might just have been a case of, hey, this is a better song just to get people in the gate, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, the record, I mean, for Suburbia. You know, this record obviously kind of transitions very well between songs, and the next one that it goes into was Woke Up Older, which is a great song, but then I think Local Man's Ruins Everything. I want to talk about that because I know it was the first single, you know, and that was the first song that they released, and I was like, well, as soon, I mean, that song came out, I think, in April 2011, so we're a few months before the record, and I was like, this is going to be great. Like, I knew right off the bat that this was going to be something, like a record that was very different from The Upsides, and that it was going to be, like, phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think what really sells this song, too, are just immediately coming into, like, the first line of the song is, like we've been talking about, is a reference to The Upsides, like the fountain to that Logan the song Logan Circle from The Upsides. It's an immediate mm-hmm. reference to They Turned On the Fountain Today in Logan Circle, where the first line of this song is the fountain was off. So it's an immediate recognition of how things are changing. It's a transitionary period, and we're kind of coming into a new sort of era for the band.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it was honestly probably the best first single they could have done, you know, from the album for that exact reason. Because I think they always wanted to be a band, of course, now we look at it now, to say that, you know, each record they want to change a little bit, right? You want to transition between, you know, era to era, so to speak. And that was a great way of segueing from The Upsides into this to let fans know, obviously, you know, you've got some of that same stuff. But I think also that was a song that let people know that they're going to be a little less
optimistic.
I don't know. Yeah, a little less optimistic. It's definitely a less optimistic record for a lot of reasons. I know, like I said earlier, his personal life too changed a lot.
Yeah, it's especially cool because I remember reading when this record came out, before the record came out, there was a interview, I think in Alternative Press, where Dan was just being interviewed, where when he said The Upsides came out, he said, my life was going great, so I wrote a album that reflected how I was feeling at the time when The Upsides came out, this very optimistic, like, look on the bright side sort of thing, which unfortunately was crazy because after The Upsides came out officially and had kind of launched them into this sort of like circle of bands that had been sort of forming, Dan kind of described how his life was kind of falling apart. I remember he said that a girl he was dating just didn't work out. And on top of that, when people are constantly asking you, because they see you as this beacon of hope and optimism, they're constantly coming up to you and saying, like, you're my hero. This record changed my life. This album made sense of a lot of things for me. And having that sort of, like, hero like, what's the word? And you can edit this out because I'm talking out loud. No worries. imposter syndrome. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That sort of imposter syndrome can kind of set in and you can start to feel like what you're doing is like wrong in a sense because it sure. doesn't feel honest in it as you had initially formed it to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just going to say, because there are lyrics like specifically to say like, I'm not a self-help book. I'm just the fucked up kid.
Yeah.
sort of thing. And that's immediately a reference to that sort of like reaction of like, hey, my life is different now. So I'm going to write Suburbia a record about how I feel now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly kind of what I wanted to get into, how it,
yeah.
it exactly addresses that, right? I mean, it literally is a song that he's like, hey, guys, like, my life is falling apart.
like, right.
I, you know, and but at the same time, it's got its, you know, little optimistic bits and pieces, right? I mean, it's not about forcing happiness. It's about not letting sadness win is kind of a bit of both, right? That lyric, you can look at it and say, okay, like, it's kind of optimistic, but at the same time, like, we're all just kind of fucked. like,
yeah, we're all trying to find that out for ourselves, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it can often feel like as soon as you get into the real world, like, life can seems like, oh, I finally have all this power and excitement, like, this is so cool, I can do things for myself, but as you start to leave college, enter the real world, life starts to take its toll, family members start dying, relationships start to change, friendships end, like, life can start to really take its toll, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as it starts to come out, not to depress the hell out of anyone listening, but that's just kind of a matter of fact of life. Like, even though things start to leave you and you get older, you do ultimately become wiser and can provide more perspective, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think this record is perfect for that scenario, which I think is why it clicked so well with that at the time. And even us, we were a little bit young. We're not obviously leaving high school or not leaving college at that time. But I mean, you know, I think it could apply to even, you know, getting older in the sense of leaving high school, right? I mean, leaving high school, especially if you're leaving for college, if you're, you know, leaving states, cities, whatever it is, I think that's all a very, like, it's scary as hell, right? I mean, it's not easy.
It's very, honestly, I've always said this to myself, but I have always been very, as a very strong Wonder Years fan my entire life, I've always been very thankful that I've been as old as I am as these records have come out and have come into my life. Because Dan is 5 or 6 years older than I am. I believe he is 33 or 34, and I'm just turning 28 this month, actually. And I've always been very thankful that I have been 18 when he was going through his 24-year-old shit. Because when I come through when I get into my 24-year-old shit, he's going through his 31-year-old shit and then puts out No Closer to Heaven. So I'm just like a half step behind him. And then as I get, it's so weird because when I get into these phases of my life that he lived, I have these records to come back to and see, oh, this is how he dealt with it. This is what it was like. I've been listening and I kind of have been able to prepare myself for this onslaught of life. So I've always been very thankful for that as a fan of this band.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm the same way. I'm 26, so I'm a year younger than you. I'm going to be 27 here, I guess, exactly a month from today. We're recording it, at least.
Happy early birthday.
Oh, thank you. and it's the same thing. I mean, like, I was in high school when this and The Upsides came out, and my brother's 2 years older than me. So, like, when he was in college or he was at college, you know, I'd kind of go up there for, you know, obviously parties at the time, right? But you would go, you know, and so you see, like, you listen to a song like This Party Sucks, and I kind of equate that song specifically from The Upsides, not to get way off track here.
No, it's fine. We're just talking about life. <You're good.
laughs> But I equate that with, like, Les and Jake's Plastic Cup Politics, right? In the sense of, I was 8 when that song came out, so I had no fucking idea what the hell they were talking about, you know? But you think of, like, This Party Sucks, you think of that song in Plastic Cup Politics, he talks about the different kind of people that, you know, when you drink, right, someone becomes angry, someone wants to talk about politics and, like, blah blah blah. And, like, as I started going into that myself, I was like, ah, yes, I see what we're talking about here. And for the most part, it has aged very well. And then you hear he breaks, obviously, a Jersey Shore, like, fist bumping ref or fist bumping reference, right? Which is, like, funny, but, like, that was what was going on in 2010. So yeah, it's
exactly,
funny, man.
Like, you kind of have to write about what you know at the time. And basically, like, when I come to, like, as I, like, live through the Wonder Years discography, I'm right now, like, as a almost 28-year-old, I'm basically leaving the Greatest Generation part of my life, and I'm entering the No Closer to Heaven part of my life, for better or worse, whatever you want to call that. So it's kind of cool to be able to have a favorite band where you have these direct correlations from a narrative standpoint into interlaced throughout their discography that you can come back to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to ask about Suburbia here. I know we've got some things we wanted to talk about. I want to ask you about too. If you were, you know, looking at kind of the songs, I know we've talked about a few so far, but what do you think from your side were the other kind of standout tracks for you on this record?
It's really funny because I've always looked, whenever I've like gone back to Suburbia and thought, like, looked for those standout tracks in the bass core of the record, because this record has been reissued and released a couple of times with some bonus tracks that I'll get into in a second.
Oh, yeah.
But with the actual Suburbia, I've given you all now nothing. I've always basically related my appreciation into the whole record itself. I think this record needs to be listened to from front to back. There are songs you can just kind of put on, like, here and there. Like, I think Don't Let Me Cave In is a very accessible single, as is,
absolutely.
As is Local Man Ruins Everything. I think both of those are very strong, perceptive, places that anyone can just kind of jump into and just sort of get the feel for what the Wonder Years does.
Sure.
So that's kind of where I feel. Hoodie Weather has always been, from the original release, Hoodie Weather has always been my favorite song, I would say.
Absolutely.
I've really connected with that song, and it's funny because Dan has always, like, had a love-hate relationship with it, because they've tried playing it live many times, and it's one of those songs that people just don't know what to do with themselves. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those songs that you can't really jump, you can't really mosh to it, you can't stage dive to it, but you also can't, like, get up to the front. It's just one of those sort of songs that you can't really...
It's like a mid-tempo song for them.
Exactly, which is difficult from a band standpoint, because you're trying to put together this set and people love this song, but it doesn't really find its place in a live setting, which is always really funny to me. But I love this song from a lyrical standpoint, and from a, like, a how it fits into the record of wanting to leave home but not really knowing where to go next, as far as, like, what your life is and school and relationships and friendships falling apart, sort of thing, but wanting more but not really sure how to find what that more is exactly.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the perfect song for, like, for that era of, like, leaving high school or leaving college, right? I mean, that is literally exactly what it's about, right? And I think if I were to pick my favorite songs, I would go for that one. I would go for I Won't Say the Lord's Prayer, because I think that is also a song that's probably a little bit difficult to play live in the same kind of sense. You know, it's a little bit faster at times, but I think I see why they don't play it, you know?
It's very polarizing. It's very polarizing because I know a lot of people who blindly, kind of, myself included, I kind of blindly was... Like, I grew up Catholic my entire life and just kind of blindly accepted the teachings of the church as I got older. And I'm not upset that I was raised Catholic at all. Like, I think that there are some things I got out of it, and I know a lot about the Bible, but like, for trivia purposes. But it's one of those things, like, when you kind of get out into the real world, you have to start thinking for yourself and hearing, like, opposing opinions. And you kind of feel like you were led astray, like, kind of realizing that a little bit, like, as you start to develop your own sense of self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I will say, man, I remember when they did their anniversary shows, right, in Philly, and they played, obviously they played Suburbia through, they played Upsides through, they played The Greatest Generation through, and they finally, you know, got to play these songs. And it was great, man. It was weird being in the crowd when we hear these songs, because some of them, like you said, it's a very polarizing song in the sense that what it's lyrically about, right? I mean, it's a very to the point of, like, I'm not going to do this. Like, I'm not going to be, like, religious. It's just kind of like a scam, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, everything he says in there. But I think for some people, like, that just, it doesn't, I don't know the right way to say it. And obviously, I know when this record came out, they talked about this song, and he was like, you know, not everybody believes in this band, believes the same thing as me, right? but they all felt strongly enough about the song to put it out. And I think that's kind of how they get away with it, and how fans that, you know, maybe are strong believers in, you know, whether it's Christianity or being Catholic, they're kind of like, meh, it, you know, doesn't bother them.
Yeah, exactly. And what's crazy too, because when I first heard this song, I, as someone that had grown up Catholic his entire life, I felt very uncomfortable hearing these things, like, like hearing these lyrics. And it was honestly like for the first few months, I actually skipped this song whenever I listened to it all the way through, because I felt like I was kind of abandoning my faith and like, and feeling like feeling guilty for doing this. And as I got older, I kind of realized, okay, like there's sort of thing, like you can kind of, I became more comfortable in my own skin and was able to process that a little bit easier and stuff. But, and as someone that isn't religious at all pretty much anymore, if you ask me, I would say I'm agnostic, but I don't really know. I just like
open mind and
hearing what people have to say, I guess. But
that's
so like, that was kind of the intended effect of Dan, was just to get people to think for themselves. And he did that for me, so I'm appreciative of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I know you, before you just mentioned, you know, some of the obviously through the re-releases, they've had, you know, additional tracks, they've had B-sides too, and I definitely want to talk on those, because I think this album has some of their strongest like songs as B-sides. Like they're very well. I love My Life as Rob Gordon. Like, that's, if I were to make a Wonder Years like dream set list, I would certainly throw that on there.
Yeah, I've only heard that song live once. It was on their tour with The Story So Far in 2013, and I lost my shit. It was so cool to hear that song.
It's a phenomenal song. I wish it would have been on the record. I think it could have been, and I think it would have been perfect.
Well, it's funny you say that, because over the course of the record cycle, between its initial release and even today, basically what happened was, like the new song Out on My Feet, because basically what happened was the band put out these two new songs, Out on My Feet, and what is the other song? The one that was my upsides.
Breakless.
Breakless, thank you.
Yep.
Those two songs, Breakless was originally, was written in the style of the upsides, and Out on My Feet was a song that was written but never recorded for the Suburbia like recording cycle. So what's crazy is that, like, what happened was the band immediately was signed to Hopeless Records, and they were told, okay, you have X amount of time to put out a new record so that we can have it out before Warped Tour 2011, which you're playing, so get cracking. You have a limited window before this can come out. So they basically put out the initial record release, and then a few months later, like as the touring cycle came on, they recorded a few other songs. Like Me Versus the Highway was originally put out on a 6-inch split with Stay Ahead of the Weather, which is one of my 5 favorite Wonder Years songs ever. I think it's incredible, and I actually have a tattoo of it on my leg.
Oh, nice!
Which is great. Now Dan wrote out The Best Years May Still Be Ahead of Me in his handwriting at Bloodfest 2019, and I just got that done back in August. So
I love it.
That was my first tattoo. That's my only tattoo. I'll probably get more, but that's my only tattoo
I
have right
now. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then there's also My Life as Rob Gordon, which came out on the iTunes release as a bonus track, which is great. It's kind of cool, too, because My Life as Rob Gordon acts as a almost similar to how Local Man Ruins Everything was that first single, like as a transitionary period, like the after effects of what the Upsides release was like. My Life as Rob Gordon kind of lyrically acts as that next step after the initial Suburbia record release. Like, kind of, I'm hearing kids talk about, like our fans talk about these songs, like they kind of own them, and there's kind of like a lack of, there's kind of some dissociation loss that Dan's kind of feeling in his relationship to his own music, which is really cool and unique to a topic to write about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one goes right there with My Life as a Pigeon, right? Because that song, My Life as a Pigeon, he talks a lot about that too, right? Kids only want the 7-inch and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So they're like very coexisting in that exact scenario.
Yeah, they're kind of sister songs in a way. And Rob Gordon being a reference to John Cusack's character in High Fidelity, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of having that same like dissociative relationship with music,
both
your own and otherwise.
Absolutely. And then I think the other one that really sticks out is Living Room Song, right? Which, of course, was it's an acoustic track, but they did a full band version of it for, I can't remember the compilation name, but it was something from No Sleep Records.
It was a No Sleep thing. Yeah, that they No Sleep compilation.
I love it. And they changed some of the lyrics a bit and that too, I think. I wish I need to find a download of that song because I love the full band version of it. Not, I don't know if I like it more, but I love it. And I think this is a song that it's another great song that if they, you know, on the rare occasions they just kind of do whatever they want, pull it out of the play it live, you know, I think that's what's great about this, you know, this band and kind of what they started doing with this record was when they, you know, you have the Upsides, and obviously the Upsides was their second record, right? But they don't, I mean, for good reasons, we, you know, they don't really play stuff off Get Stoked On It, right? So when you got to the Upsides, you get, so when you get to the, when you get to Suburbia, now you just blow open the doors of like how many songs you can play live. And at this point, I remember going to the Glamour Kills tour, I mentioned that earlier, and they were still playing, you know, Keystone State Dude Core. But that song at least is like kind of still fits, you know, they, but now, I mean, to this day, still you can look back on this record and you can pull even random B-sides off this and everybody knows the words, right? Cause it's so good. I mean,
yeah,
it's phenomenal that they can release a record that does so well and then release B-sides that everyone's like, I fucking love it. And they're not just like, meh, it's, you know, it's not just a thing to re-release it and make some more money, right? You've got songs on it that actually could have, and some may say should have, made the record.
Absolutely. And I remember Dan said in a Q&A on Instagram once, he said, like, someone asked him which of the B-sides from the Suburbia record release cycle would you have liked included on Suburbia, and he said every single song. He thinks that he honestly believes there is a natural like place for every single one of these songs in the context of the record. And I'm inclined to agree. I think there's a couple even in the original cut that could be B-sided instead. Which, Dan, if you're hearing this by some wild stretch of the imagination, if you're listening to this, if you ever want to put out a director's cut of what you would like to have seen, like the order and like just the change of the sonic template of what Suburbia is, if you ever want to put a director's cut out of what you think Suburbia should be, I'm all for that. Even if it's just a playlist on iTunes or Spotify or some shit, please do that, because I really want to hear your like actual like intended vision for this album. Like, that sounds fucking awesome to me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good like way of retroactively kind of looking at it, right? I mean, to look at it now and say, okay, like if I had to redo it today, now would be a great time, obviously, not to sit here and like, we're going to be like, hey, Dan, please do it. We're going to press you if you're listening to this for some reason.
I'm pressuring you, Dan. Please do that.
Do it, man.
Logan does not speak for me. Please do that.
I know, man. Dan, I know you're busy. I know you've got a kid at home, but if you've ever got 5-15 minutes, man, just put a Spotify playlist out there. I would love to see it. Just let us know what you would do with it now.
I've always thought that would be a really cool like alternative press or substream piece where like you kind of interview him and kind of get his new thoughts on how, in retrospect, like what is the order, like what is the intended vision of this.
Yeah, absolutely, that'd be fun. And I mean, this record, you know, I think if we kind of want to, you know, segue into how this record is today, I know when we were talking about this, you mentioned you want to do this record, so I know how you feel obviously with it being one of your favorite records, or one of your being your favorite record from them. I mean, obviously you're not alone, you know. I mean, when this record came out, everybody kind of right off the bat was like, this is it. You know, I know Alt Press gave it 4.5 out of 5, AP gave it a 10, the Crane gave it a 5. I mean, everybody was like, this is how you make like a pop punk record, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was deserved. It still is.
Yeah, it's cool too, because at the time, for Alternative Press and AbsolutePunk.net respectively, Scott Heisel and Thomas Nassif wrote very thoughtfully about this band too, like in the, like as it came out and understood like the importance and impact of what Dan and the rest of the band was doing, both from a lyrical standpoint and how strong, like how strongly like an important this album that came, really was that it came out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think they both did great jobs of that, and I would love to see, you know, some of those retroactive. I mean, if you look back on it now, I think we could kind of verbalize it here, but I think it's held up like tremendously well, right? I mean, it's one of those that, you know, kind of where the Upsides has some of those, like we talked about, those Jersey Shore references, all that kind of stuff, which you kind of have to do. Then this record, I think, is kind of largely free of those. So if you put this record out and if you give it to somebody that has never heard of the Wonder Years, doesn't know a damn thing about them, and you say, hey, this band just released this record yesterday, here it is, I think it would go for it. I think it would pass.
Yeah,
there's nothing in it that I feel like dates it at all.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Because I know, because I feel like a lot of people say this is their favorite record of the Wonder Years mm-hmm. catalog. I know some people don't feel that way, and those people are wrong. But I go back and forth between. I think The Greatest Generation is their best record. It's their it's the one that feels the most like a Wonder Years record. Because I think Scott said, I think Scott Heisel said in his Greatest Generation review that the band was kind of like with Suburbia. It very much. It's a very good album, but it very much felt like a. Like it was, you can tell that it was very inspired by The Starting Line and the Get Up Kids and those types of bands. And it kind of has the sort of impact of a band of something like The Starting Line's Based on a True Story or Saves the Days Through Being Cool. It feels very much similar to those types of records where The Greatest Generation very much feels like their thing. It feels like a Wonder Years record for the most part. And Greatest Generation has always been like the one that I say is their best product, but I think Suburbia will always be my favorite for the aforementioned reasons.
Absolutely, man. I would agree. I would probably say the same thing. I think I go back and forth on them. You know, it just kind of depends on how I'm feeling. The Greatest Generation is it's such I don't know, man. And that was the most, I think, excited I've ever been for a record, like going into that time. Mm-hmm. And it's for the Wonder Years. I think I've tweeted about it a few times, but the run that they went on with this quote unquote trilogy was phenomenal. I mean, I haven't seen anything like it since, you know, and obviously I'm not sitting here, like they still do music. It's still very good. But I think if we're looking at like hype within the quote unquote scene, right, these records, and like Suburbia following up The Upsides, and then The Great Generation, Get Erased Generation following this up. I don't know. I guess I haven't seen anything like it. Like it's just such like everybody was kind of rallying around them, wanting to see what the hell would they do next, you know? And I think that's because of their groundwork they laid with Suburbia to let you know that they separated themselves from bands at the time, like Man Overboard, and the story so far, and even like A Loss for Words, because everybody all kind of got signed at the same time, right? I mean, they went to Hopeless, and then all those other bands essentially went to Rise Records.
A lot of bands went to Rise. Fireworks went to Triple Crown. Lot of these bands were popping off at the exact same time. It was like basically like an overnight sort of thing, which is crazy because a lot of these bands had been like had done like 2 to 3 upwards of 4 years of like grinding on the roads. And then all of a sudden, like, the bubble broke and all these bands were just unleashed into the stratosphere.
Absolutely, man. And I think we mentioned Fireworks earlier. Fireworks is probably one that should have been signed. I think this is when you look at, you know, what Man Overboard did with whatever the hell, their self-titled record they put out in 2011, right? It was... And you look at, you compare that to Suburbia, I think it's very clear. And again, like you said, those bands have their places. They have like their like kind of niche in the scene that they go to, right? But Suburbia kind of let everybody know that the Wonder Years were going to be something different than that, you know? They didn't necessarily just rehash the first record. They weren't still writing about, you know, just girls or blah, 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 whatever it is. It's something significantly different. And I think that's what helped launch them way further than any bands at that time that were getting signed.
Yeah, it's crazy because, Suburbia is a record for the genre that I think is a lot smarter and more thoughtful than I think a lot of comparable records were coming out at the time. Like you said, I feel like pop punk is rightfully pigeonholed as a genre that's hard-headed, like very high school, getting aggression, angst, while also being catchy and having that pop appeal. Which it definitely is, and bands that stay in that lane, I think, have their merits in ways because they allow as an outlet for those frustrations. But the downside of that is that it can lead into a lot of other attitudes for the genre that really need to be steered away from, like misogyny and a lot of these one-sided narratives. Like, you broke my heart. You did me wrong. I'm mad at you, whore, slut, whatever you want to go into. Like, that shit needs to stop. So many bands, especially in the early aughts, fell into this trap at times. But bands like The Wonder Years and Fireworks, too, specifically, I think wrote on a higher level than that. And they showed that they can weave together these really thoughtful, carefully constructive narratives. Because of that, I think Suburbia really stands the test of time as my favorite record of theirs. And I think it continues, and The Wonder Years continues to be a band that takes risks in the genre in a really progressive way that I think needs to continue to be done.
Yeah, Absolutely. I agree with that entirely. That's kind of where I'm at with it, man. I think it's done so many great things for them as a band, and I think inspired so much different kind of outlook on that scene entirely. And I think, I know they're kind of, you know, and the records they released since then, they're kind of largely away from that pop punk, right? Away from that kind of pop punk music and that scene in general, which I think is good. Because if I also don't, you know, as much as I love these records, I love like this time in their band, I don't really want a 34-year-old Dan Campbell. You know, I mean, I don't really want that. You know, I think Break This and Out of My Feet are great songs. I think they're very good. But I also don't know that I want a full album of that. But maybe they could do it. You know, they might be able to pull it off to where it's not kind of cliche. You know,
yeah, it's I'd be interested possible to see that they could go that direction. But I also kind of like seeing the Wonder Years kind of continue to evolve as a band, like not just lyrically, but also sonically, and taking more risks with like just with musical and production choices. I feel like the band could have a very similar career to someone like a band like Manchester Orchestra that has a very solid core elite fan base that like knows what they want from the band, and they know how to please their fans. Very comparable to Menzingers too, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those bands like really have strong fan bases rooted in specific sounds, and as long as you keep those specific fans happy, then you've got a career, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. I think they'd probably tell you the same thing, man. I think barring any weird shift in kind of what the radio wants to play, I think the Wonder Years are kind of at that stage in the career. And this isn't even a bad thing. I mean, you look at a band like Taking Back Sunday, for example, they, you know, they're not getting any bigger than they currently are. You know, you consistently can hit out tours, sell out 1,700, 2,000 cap venues. And that's there. I mean, there's a career on that, right? Yeah, I think that's kind of where the Wonder Years are.
Yeah, Taking Back Sunday will forever play last on a side stage at Riot Fest. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely, man. That's a good spot to be. I mean, they'll play. I mean, they're there every year, right?
So exactly. They are the house band at this point.
That's right. That's right. Remember, I don't have, you know, much else here. Well, I guess, you know, we can kind of dive into our final thoughts. Is there anything else that, you know, if you had to sell somebody on this record, or, you know, anything else that you just really want to say about Suburbia, especially if Dan's listening?
Sure. Yeah. I think this record is incredible. I think it's a milestone for that transition of early aughts pop punk, coming from like sort of the like these broier sort of styles and bands, and kind of taking it into a more progressive direction with really thoughtful lyrics and just a really complex narrative, with a lot kind of all coalescing into this really finished fine product that means a lot and is very kind and thoughtful and smart, while also being aggressive and funny and heartbreaking. And it's just an amalgamation of all these things I love in music, and I love in this scene, and I love in this band. So if you have not listened to Suburbia, please do it. It's one of my favorite records of all time for damn reason.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know you said that earlier, but I would always encourage people to listen to it front to back. Once. I mean, at least once. Cause I think they, you know, like we said, I'd love to see how we would lay it out now, but I think how it is still perfect. I mean, I think it's, unless you want to throw in the B sides, but how it is now, if you listen to the album, how it is now, their original release.
Yeah. Whether it's the classic intended vision, like the initial release, or some sort of random in like later revisionist vision of this record, I think it really holds up either way. So
absolutely. Well, I appreciate it, Lynn. I don't have much else here. I think I think it's a great record. I think we've kind of talked on it, and I think it's one of those things where if someone hasn't already listened to it and they listen to us and they still don't want to listen to it, then that's kind of on them to be wrong, you know? So
if you haven't listened to this record, please do. I mean, it turns 10, and the band just put out a remaster on vinyl in a box set with the upsides. You might be able to still buy that. There might be some copies left. Please don't quote me.
Maybe.
Don't run in my inbox if there is.
Yes. That's right. And man, let's just hope that maybe whenever the world gets normal, we can see them live, and maybe they'll do something for this tower, man. I mean, I know kind of everything derailed what plans they had, but let's hope that maybe we can see something. I would drive to Philly again to see this record in full. I would just say
Well, apparently the band was initially planning a tour for the fall where they were going to play Upsides and Suburbia
both of them
in entirety, which I would have gone to.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
I would have gone to Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, like wherever you got that tour, I'll go.
Yeah. Absolutely. Same. So let's hold out hope we can see it maybe next year. Who knows? At least something. Giving me a live stream at this point. I'll pay to sit at home and watch that.
Yeah, I would watch a live stream. I would want the whole real thing too, but I mean only when it's safe, but I would take a live stream.
That's right.
As well.
Absolutely. 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 Well, Lena, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming on here to talk to me about this record, about how good it is. And we will have to catch up and do something else again soon.
Thanks, Logan, and good luck with this series. I'm excited to see how it evolves.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You too, man. Bye-bye.